driven by Briggs Auto Lane.
Let's have some fun. Let's go.
And BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Welcome back to the game. It's Hour 2. I'm John Kurtz, joined by Mitch Fortner. Max Olson from the ESPN Big 12 blog will join us at 525. Where do the Cats fit in the Big 12 title race next year after a 9-4 season in 2016? You can't be serious as well. We'll round out today's show. You can tweet questions or comments to the game, KMAN. I've got some thoughts on Big 12 basketball from last night. A couple interesting bits to pull from really just one of the games, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, that I think you can relate back to K-State in a couple of different ways. 537-1350, 866-776-1350 to join the show as well. By the way, if you do have a phone call. So Brad Underwood and Oklahoma State lose at home to Iowa State last night in a really high-scoring affair. Pretty close for a while. Iowa State pulled away in the last 4 or 5 minutes of that one, and it's left Brad Underwood now 0-4 in Big 12 play with a couple of home losses. And I start with this purely because I have an end goal in mind here, and I'm going to set you up a little bit for it. But, you know, I think you look at that on the surface. Oklahoma State now has 6 losses this year, 10-6, 0-4 in the Big 12. That's a disappointing profile for them at this point in the season based on some of the buzz that they had generated early on in the season. And I think that a lot of people in the K-State fan base that were so upset that Brad Underwood, a K-State guy, wound up going to a different Big 12 school, did not come here at a point when K-State's own basketball program was struggling. That's obviously another aspect of this. You know, when you're struggling, when you're not happy, easier to have eyes for someone else, and that's what happened here. And I remember commenting at the time that I was surprised at just how wide-reaching some of the Brad Underwood frustration seemed to be, but that seemed to turn just a lot of people more negative about where K-State basketball was just because Brad Underwood was hired at a different Big 12 school. And I think because of that, you had a lot of people that were more inclined to want to jump on the early success that Oklahoma State had, because you've got your idea, your narrative in mind, which is Brad Underwood's going to come in and work magic right away at Oklahoma State. And I think that that's going to happen. So therefore, when they go ahead and beat teams like Georgetown and UConn in their non-conference schedule, that's backing up my narrative. I'm not going to go do more research on what those teams actually are. They're a really good team. See, we should have hired that guy. I think there was a lot of that type of sentiment going on early on when Brad Underwood started off hot the way that he did. They got blown out by North Carolina and Maui, but other than that, did pretty well in the non-conference schedule, even beat Wichita State, which, hey, I'm not going to take anything away from them for the Wichita State win. That was a nice win, and they did it in Wichita and in Trust Bank Arena. But if you're trying to validate Oklahoma State's non-conference resume, I mean, some of those wins become tougher to do. You're looking at a win over a UConn team that's 7-9 now. Georgetown's 9-8. They had a close loss to Maryland. Doesn't that sound familiar? And then they had the win over Wichita State. So all in all, for the expectation level of Oklahoma State, where they finished in the Big 12 last year, nothing to complain about. But that should not have really served as an indicator that they were all of a sudden going to be a top four team in the Big 12. I say all that just to point out that, well, they're 0-4 right now in the league, and things seem to be coming apart a little bit for this season for Oklahoma State. By no means do I think it's really any kind of indictment on Brad Underwood. Yeah, the other thing that Brad Underwood has working against him probably in this scenario is he won 32 games his first year at Stephen F. Austin. So he worked some magic right away there in what was a good situation. Clearly, things are going to be more difficult, and it's a lot different taking over what he took over at Oklahoma State. So I think two totally different scenarios here. He still could be an absolute dynamite head coach, and they still could finish this year in the NCAA tournament. Joe Lenardi, who has his bracketology that we're going to check here in just a moment, had him in for a long time. Tyler was arguing K-State's case against them last week when Oklahoma State was still in the tournament. Because of their strength of schedule and some of those decent wins that they have, they could still make the tournament. Don't write Oklahoma State off yet at this point, even though they lost at home to Iowa State, a team that, frankly, that's a game Oklahoma State probably should be winning. I'd be very disappointed if I were an Oklahoma State fan right now, but much like the position that K-State is in, they got a lot more opportunities to prove themselves, and I think they're about on that same level as K-State right now in terms of where they're at. They've played a harder schedule to start Big 12 play. They had Iowa State and West Virginia at home. They had road games at Texas and Baylor. So I think it's been a tougher schedule for them so far. They're still in the neighborhood of where K-State is at. Don't write off Brad Underwood yet this year. Certainly don't for what he is going to be at Oklahoma State. But I think some people put him on too high of a pedestal based on the way that they started this season. It's going to be a grind at Oklahoma State. You look at the arena last night for that game, not a lot of excitement there. Not a lot of people seemed to be there. It did not seem like a juiced up atmosphere at OSU at Gallagher-Iba Arena last night. So they've got a ways to go in terms of getting that thing turned around.
That's something I wanted to mention. The attendance last night in Gallagher-Iba, 6,066 folks. I doubt there was even half that. It wasn't very good. And I know the non-con at the Octagon of Doom didn't look good at all, but what it's been like for conference play, I think it's a blessing what K-State fans have done for the K-State men's team right now when it comes to attendance.
Well, the other part of the Oklahoma State-Iowa State game that I wanted to point out is watching that game down the stretch, Iowa State did exactly what K-State has been failing to do in a very similar position. Iowa State and Oklahoma State are teams that are really in the same tier, basically, in the Big 12, I would say, at least close. Iowa State should be ahead of Oklahoma slightly, but I think Oklahoma State's closer really than you might think, especially when the playing field's leveled by playing in Gallagher-Iba. But at least you could view it like this. This is a better way to say it. View it like Oklahoma State hosting Iowa State should be pretty similar to Oklahoma State hosting K-State in terms of going in there and trying to get a win. You would say that Iowa State and K-State should probably win that game. And Iowa State and K-State, I think, have proven that they're both good enough to be in the scenario that Iowa State was last night, and that is up by four with just under 5 minutes left in the game. How many times this year, well, really it's two, but, you know, the frustrating thing we've been going over and over with and lamenting is K-State was in very similar situations against both Maryland and Texas Tech. You're up four with the ball against Maryland late in the game. You wind up losing. You're up four with the ball with about 2 minutes left against Texas Tech, and you wind up losing the game. Here's Iowa State, just under 5 minutes left. They're up four, and they just steadily strung together good possession after good possession, and they wind up burying Oklahoma State from there and putting them more and more at arm's length, and they stepped on their throat and won that game. They closed out the game really well. That's a lesson in, I think, having veteran players that are used to winning. Iowa State is very similar to K-State in how their roster's composed. They've got five players in their starting lineup that are very good. They're really close to being like K-State and having all the guys averaging 10-plus points per game. They have one averaging eight. And then they have virtually nothing on the bench. They got five bench points last night against Oklahoma State, team that's composed very similarly. But they have guys in Monte Morris, Naz Long, Matt Thomas, who have played in multiple Sweet 16s. They've won a lot of games. They've really competed for Big 12 titles. They're used to winning games like that. And you saw an example of them going out, completely shutting the door on Oklahoma State when they needed to, when they got their opportunity there down the stretch. That's what's going to happen for K-State, and that's what K-State has to fight, is finding a way to be able to do that like Iowa State did. Because I remember being surprised, looking up and thinking, man, this is a close game. In fact, Oklahoma State was up about midway through the second half, and now Iowa State has just completely put the clamps down on them, and Monte Morris took over that game late. K-State needs someone to do that. Monte Morris had 14 points in the last 6 minutes of the game. He's a go-to guy, and in some ways, it's great to have as many guys that can score as K-State does, but then we've asked that question many times down the stretch. Who's your go-to guy? Who do you want to have the ball in your hands late when you really need a hoop? You know, Wesley Owundu has been the guy against Kansas and Texas Tech to have the ball there, but he hasn't been able to make the plays quite the way that a Monte Morris did in that example against Oklahoma State. And Wesley Owundu hasn't done as much winning as Monte Morris has in his career, quite frankly. And maybe there is a piece of that, a piece of what we talked about in the open, a piece of just being a part of so many close, excruciating losses that it's hard to teach yourself, it's hard to learn how to burst through and how to make those winning plays like Iowa State did last night. But anyway, I thought there was a lot to take away from Iowa State, Oklahoma State, actually, as it relates to K-State if you're watching that game. Now, the Wildcats have a big stretch coming up here. If you look at KenPom, Ken Pomeroy's website for college basketball, which a lot of people use as a virtual Bible in college hoops, I mean, they're projecting out games. Now, they still have K-State finishing 9-9 in the Big 12, but they also have K-State losing the next four games. It's a big stretch here and very, very losable games. And you need some wins because, for one, if you look at Joe Lenardi's bracketology right now, which he updated today, as of January 12th, K-State is in the first four out. So he's still got them out of the NCAA tournament based on what they've done right now. And it just even looks more hollow when you break down the actual profile of K-State at the moment in terms of just tangible things that will matter to the selection committee. Again, this is what I was trying to preach yesterday. It's nice to hang with Kansas. That's probably not going to carry a lot of weight. It's not going to show up on a resume anywhere when people are debating bubble teams at the end of the year going into the tournament. You look at tangible wins that K-State has right now, they've got none against the RPI top 100, so they are 4-3 then against the top 150 if you put all that together, and then they're 9-0 against sub 150 teams in the RPI. Strength of schedule is still at 150. The non-conference strength of schedule is 248. I mean, your RPI is 48, not horrible. That is in position to get you in the tournament, but you're going to have to back it up with some more substantial wins. This continues to be basically a K-State trivia question for the year right now, but do you know who K-State's best win RPI-wise is right now?
Yes, I do. Do you want me to answer it?
Yes.
Nebraska-Omaha.
That is correct. Nebraska-Omaha, who's 112. You've got Nebraska, Omaha, Green Bay, Colorado State, and Texas as your best wins. And by the way, Texas just suspended their leading scorer, Tevin Mack, today. That's not a ship that seems to be sailing in the right direction. So this is going to be huge. Baylor at Oklahoma State, West Virginia, and at Iowa State. It's a difficult stretch, but you could also see K-State hanging in every single one of those games and having a shot to win. Going to have to start grabbing some of those.
Well, in case they can easily, I mean, within a short amount of time, turn this around. And I'm talking about where they stand right now and with the bracketology, the resume, because they got two straight top 10 teams coming into Bramlage Coliseum. Baylor this weekend, and then next weekend is West Virginia. They can do it very quickly. Just got to get the W's.
That's
all it's about, man.
That is what it is. Just grabbing that W.
W's and Benjamins.
Reach out and take it.
Apparently, that's what it's all about. Yeah.
Trying to grab some money.
Yeah, later down the road.
It's illegal, man.
Later down the road.
That. Not trying to get guys suspended, not trying to get a program on probation.
Later on the road, you can't get Benjamins if you don't get W's.
Okay, yeah, that is true. Better get the W's first. You can't be serious at 5:50 when we come back. Max Olson from ESPN, he covers the Big 12. He'll join us. Where does K-State fit in the Big 12 title race next season after the 9-4 finish to 2016? We'll ask him here on the game.